But I do see him in this second half of the season just absolutely going ham and showing everyone why he is one of the best players in the world at his position. And I think that's not a lot. That's not a crazy take, but it might be. I don't know.
We here!
Yes, sir!
Hello, everybody, and Happy New Year. Welcome to the first episode of the 6 Yard Box Podcast in 2025. Boom. It sounds weird to say we're in episode 76, episode one of the new
year. Kudos to you for always knowing the number. I never do. And I'm the one that edits the podcast, and I still don't know the number. So,
you know, that's what you have. That's what you do when you name the studio in StreamYard. You produce the entire episode. You mark it in your Notion. You put it in your calendar. I'm kidding. This is just effort, baby. And we love it.
Are you yelling? Blake, like, fuck.
I'm kidding. That.
I'm kidding.
It's only me and Blake today, so yeah. You're allowed to hate on other people's effort too. Why am I coming for people, bro? Like, nobody is putting in bad effort. Nobody's putting in bad effort. I sound so like I have no ill will towards anybody. Anyways, Blake, Happy New Year. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Happy New Year to yourself as well. I'm good. Arsenal started off their new year as they mean to go on with a win against Brentford in a stadium that is like impossible to win at. So I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
I know, right? Bro, the GTEC's like a fortress this year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Old Trafford is not. Oh my God.
Hey man, what can I say? My secondary and third teams doing well against United and just the way it should be. It's the way it should be.
I know. Hell of a week for all your teams, basically. How did Bournemouth do, actually?
Yeah.
Because I know Ipswich. Oops. I mean.
I don't even know. I should know. All I know is Clivert was like, he's my fantasy, and he was either suspended or I don't know. That's a whole other story. Like, oh my God.
Everybody, in this episode, we're going over the recent Premier League games before and after the new year. And most importantly, we are going over our big, bold 2025 predictions in the football world for the next calendar year. There's stuff about this summer's tournaments, Premier League results, stuff happening, you know, during and after the summer. So we're going to come back to these in a year and be like, wow, we're stupid.
Yeah. Pretty much. Bournemouth drew. They drew with Fulham. That was a good game, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Like, two decent little sides there.
Yeah.
I was saying good week for your team because of Ipswich. Like.
Right. Yeah. Is that where you want to go? You want to go Ipswich first?
We want to start with Ipswich. We can start with Ipswich. This is an untraditional start to the pod.
And see, that's what it is. We're starting with Ipswich. We're not starting with you know, who they beat. We're starting with Ipswich because they're massive. Oh. And yeah, that's my whole spiel, actually.
Their first Premier League win at home in over 20 years, Blake.
It's like, it's crazy. And obviously, like, I'm not an Ipswich fan. But if I was to have that, you know, performance against a team who is, I don't know, self-proclaimed, like going for a
not
title.
Self-proclaimed, really. That. Like they were, sure, for a little bit there.
Whatever. I guess one of the top teams, not only in the league, but well-renowned teams in Europe, and a team that is, you know, on the up right now, and we're in really good form, to go to for them to host them and play like that and neutralize all their attacking threats. That's a lot. And man, McKenna, he's doing the job, and people were a bit nervous or weary, at least that's what I saw, of how that game would translate to the Prem, as every manager and every team is when they come into the top flight in English football. But at the end of the day, what Ipswich is doing, these little draws here and there, the wins that they picked up, if they can keep this up, they can get above United, and they can, you know, get, sorry, but if they keep this up.
Okay.
If they keep this up, I think they're in 18th right now, so they're not the bottom feeders of the Premier League. It's not impossible to see a reality where they actually stay up this season.
They're 7 points behind United. All right. I know we're bad, but we're not that bad. That's crazy. Like, was it bad of me as a United fan to want Chelsea to come back? Because I'm more concerned with Ipswich right now than Chelsea. How far are the mighty have fucking fallen?
That's crazy. Like, and Arsenal had our moments too. Remember in Arteta's second year, maybe, when we lost three first in a row full season,
you were like genuinely like 3 points above relegation. I remember that. And then you beat Chelsea.
That was like, you know, 3 games into the season. So everyone was freaking out. Lad, we're exactly halfway into your season. And
no, I remember a time where you guys were just above relegation before Christmas. I remember that.
Okay, maybe. Sure.
Yeah, it was bad. And then you guys were playing Chelsea, who I don't know. I think Lampard was still there. It was right before Lampard got sacked. And It was like, there's absolutely no way Chelsea don't win. And you guys win. I think that was the game that Saka scored off a cross and everybody was saying that it was intentional. You remember that game now?
Yeah, I do.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Those were dark times. Enough. And then literally the next year you're in fucking title contention. So
fair.
Anyways. And that's where we are now.
Yeah. No,
the whole... go on.
No, I was going to say, before we get off track, I just want to say that I think this whole Chelsea thing is just a regression to the mean. Obviously, against Ipswich, you would expect them to win. But I just do think that a lot of their players were overperforming. And like most players do, they go through dips of form. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't watch this game. I actually did watch the highlights, though. It just didn't seem like there was a lot... certainly going right for Chelsea in this game. And I think that genuinely is what they're going to have to combat with coming into this next couple of games and this stretch into January. This is where a lot of teams, the fixtures pile up. People get sick, injured, hurt. There's a lot of things that can go wrong for a team that has a lot of pressure on them. So they seem to fight through that. And hopefully, for their sake, they can do it. But yeah, that's all I have to say.
Chelsea is like, in this game, it was rotation. And Chelsea have great rotation, like in terms of depth, right? Like they don't have an 11 and then a bunch of bums off of that 11, right? They played João Félix in this game. They played Nkunku. They played Madueke. Just in general, they rotated, especially around the front line. They also rested Robert Sanchez. They played Jorgensen, I believe, who gave away a penalty. That Nkunku chance, I don't know if you've seen it, Blake. But the one off the Palmer free kick. And then there are some chances where it would be harder to miss than to score. And that was one of them. He has an entire open net and he still somehow tucks it into the left-hand corner. But that's where the fucking keeper is. Good job, mate. And it just emphasizes more how much I think Nicholas Jackson is actually important to this team, which is something I didn't think I would be saying in 2024. That would be a bold prediction. This time last year, saying that Nicholas Jackson would end up being important to Chelsea, but they need another striker, maybe even someone better than Nicholas Jackson, and then or just at least somebody with more depth. I don't think Margui is the answer to that, and Cuckoo certainly isn't, not for this Chelsea team.
He isn't my Kramer, I'll tell you that for sure.
You know what I was thinking the other day?
What were you thinking?
And Cuckoo would work so well in an Amorim system.
They go
no, but Blake. He would. I'm telling you, okay. He would.
Sure. I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy that's a thought that you had that makes no sense to ever happen. But I'm just so happy that you figured that out for yourself. And you know what? Kudos to you. I hope it makes you feel better about 17. Sorry, 14. 15th? I don't even know where the hell you are. Wherever.
14th. 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 Get your facts right about a relegation fight. All right. No, I think it would work well in one of those roles, like just off the striker, as like a number 10, like a 9.5 kind of thing. I think it's similar to Havertz, where it's like as a solo nine, as like you need him to, you're relying on him for goals. Absolutely the fuck not. But as a supporting piece right behind the nine, then he could actually do better. And you still rely on Havertz as a nine sometimes.
Yeah, but at Leipzig, that's kind of what his role was more or less, correct? Exactly. It wasn't that focal point that Chelsea play with. It was more of, like you said, just behind. So that's a good point, especially with the way that Emery has the two. Again, Emery ball, I hate to say I'm a fan of what he's employing, but I really am. But we can go there now if you want. There's anything else in that game you want to
talk about. Sure.
But yeah, I'm like genuinely, and I haven't wavered on this. Like I genuinely think what he's doing and the mindset that he's bringing in. As soon as he dropped Rashford and Garnacho, like, that for me was like, reminded me of Arteta stripping Alba of the captaincy. That's what it reminded me of. And it was like, hey, this is my team. I'm not dealing with any BS that you're doing with on the side. This is what we need to do if we want to get better. And if you're not a part of the problem, like you always say, or if you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem, right? That kind of thing, whatever. But yeah, I like it. So I get the Nkunku thing, but it's just never going to happen, is it?
It's never going to happen, no. I mean, like, there is a world where Nkunku leaves Chelsea. I can definitely see that. Like, if you had asked me, like, a couple years back that, like, if Havertz was going to leave Chelsea to go to Arsenal, I would have called you crazy. You would have called me crazy. Nobody was seeing that coming, then it just happened one day for a crazy fee. Like, I don't think we pay a crazy fee for Nkunku, and I think there's other people that can fill that role, but it wouldn't be the worst pickup in the world. Anyways, Amorim has credit because he's new, so he can actually make those bold decisions, and I love that, right? The tactics is I'm a fan of. Like, it really pisses me off because there are certain members of the media who are pushing this narrative that this is no different than when Ten Hag was here or when Ollie was here or whatever. And I think that is so tiny brained because even just looking at the way United play, yeah, it's an absolute disaster sometimes because individual mistakes, but you could at least see the vision of what we're trying to do. And I cannot wait, probably next season, when we could have a few more of the right pieces in that system. I'm not saying we're fucking making a title charge next year, but progress.
I wouldn't say that either, to be honest. the game itself against Newcastle, I think a lot of United fans were scared. I think you were scared. And I think after 5 minutes, your inhibitions or your worries were proven correct.
Because, bro, like, Amorim's biggest mistake so far. Like, I love Amorim, but he made a big mistake starting Casemiro and Eriksen in the same midfield pivot. He had done that, I think, in his first game against Ipswich, and I thought he found out instantly that just doesn't work. There's no legs there. Like, they got ran through more than insert sexual innuendo here. But, and that made him, like, half an hour into the game, make a substitution, which we're going to fucking get to because that was embarrassing, to then move Eriksen to a 10 and then have the midfield pivot be Casemiro and Mainu, which worked a lot better. I thought we were better in the second half. Like, it pained me that I was with you, Blake, and I had to leave because then I had to watch the second half again. Thanks for that, buddy. But we looked somewhat better in the second half. But, like, it confuses me why Amorim even thought that Casemiro and Eriksen would ever work, especially against Newcastle, who have been dominating midfields lately. Ever since Tonali moved back to the six, they've been the best team in the league by form, maybe besides Liverpool.
But yeah, no, it's a really good point. And I will go to Newcastle too, because I think a lot of people, like, with the whole, you know, Tonali suspension thing for however long that was, I certainly forgot about him and his impact and his ability as a player. And that's just what happens when these players are gone for this long. You forget. It's essentially a new signing for them. And you hear that a lot, but it really was. I know he's been back for a minute now, but it just fills a role that was gaping for that a little bit. And now when you have Joelinton and Bruno and Tonali, like, the balance there is really good. And it's, and you know what it is? It's greasy. It's grimy. It's like, you don't want to run through that. You don't want to... If they're, like, coming at you shoulder to shoulder, that's a hard battle to win. If they're coming at you, like, going for a side tackle, they might, you know, scrape your ankle with their studs. Like, you're kind of scared to, you know, like, there's an intimidation factor within that midfield that I think is really working out for them. And then, obviously, Isak is just clad. I think it was another bad take. I showed him earlier in the year. I said, I don't really know if he's that. Yeah, no, he's...
You said that about Isak?
Blake. I think I did. I try to like do something different. Didn't work.
Oh my
Isak's
God,
box.
Dude.
No, Isak's box.
Like, Gordon, everything goes through him. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. He's like if Haaland had half of the footballing ability that Isak had, he would be the best player in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with that.
You understand what I'm trying to say?
Which is low-key disrespectful, but like I can see where you're coming from. Yeah. Yes.
And maybe vice versa. If he's like got the finishing ability of Haaland, then like vice versa. You know what I mean? But
I mean, he's got like, a hell of a finishing ability, to be fair.
But either way, he's so
good. But he's not Haaland, yeah.
No, he's not. But I love that about him too. Left foot, right foot. Doesn't matter what side. His head, he can score in so many different ways. And again, he's intimidating too. I know he's a bit skinnier in stature, but he's a big dude, man. Like if there's a cross coming into the box, and man, these Newcastle players know how to put a ball into the box. Yeah, it's an intimidating thing to face.
Bro, that the first and second goal were like a replay of each other. Yes, Gordon really. On the left, cuts on his right foot. Beautiful cross in, basically an open header. Why the F is Lisandro Martinez marking him?
Like, we need to have a conversation about him. He, man, Lisandro Martinez.
I can understand his role in the team, like as a ball playing center back, but there should be no world where he is the one marking 6-2 Alexander Isak.
Hey, but is this Amorim system that you're playing right now, is it now accenting his frailties, and is Licha becoming like accenting, like, you know, you know what accenting it, like if you accentuate something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Accentuating, is that the right word? I don't know. Bro, sure. Anyway,
exemplifies?
No.
Okay.
It's like pointing out, okay, is this Amorim system pointing out Leach's flaws? And is he becoming a little overrated in my opinion? Yeah, I think so. I think Harry Maguire right now is more important to your back line than Leach is, because he plays that central center back role and he's kind of that rock. And like you said, he's a system player, and the system kind of fits Harry Maguire more than it does Leach. And I don't know. Like I just don't see an avenue where Licha has a lot of success in an Amorim system. Maybe I'm wrong, but from what I've seen so far, it just seems like if there's a weak side cross going in, like you said, he just gets bodied. So I
get what you're saying, but bro, Maguire being more important is kind of crazy. Like, Maguire can be really good when someone else in the back line is making up for his frailties, right? If you have a pacey center back like Yoro or Martinez, then you can cover Maguire's weakness of moving like a dump truck. And but same thing, like if you have like De Ligt or Maguire in the back line, then you would think that you would have less scenarios where Lisandro is the one being tasked to mark players on crosses. Mm-hmm. I think De Ligt is like actually our most important center back. Like,
I agree.
By far and away.
I would agree.
But that may be a conversation for a separate day. Can we talk about Xerxes, please?
Here go.
Oh boy. Man, if that was me, like I know he's kind of got the scapegoat there, but man, to show my face in that stadium again, that's tough.
You don't come back from that. Getting subbed off at half an hour is bad enough, but then walking down the tunnel to the applaud of the fans, and I don't think it was like a supportive applause. I think it was a thank God you're off the field kind of applause. And
little Bronx cheer.
Yeah. Not only that, because then you could play it off as like an injury, you then get told off to come back on the field, and then you sulk your way back to the bench where you should be. I don't even care if like, oh, he had to go grab an ice pack from the change room. That's just optics, bro. You ask an assistant to go get that for you. You don't go down the tunnel for any reason after getting subbed off in that high profile moment. That is bad. It probably marks the end of Xerxes' illustrious career at Man United.
And what I hate too is I feel like this is a bit of a trend for Manchester United. It's happening with Xerxes. It kind of happened with Maguire. It happened with Jadon Sancho. And these highly touted players that you guys bought for a lot of money, this expectation that comes with it sort of seems to ruin them. And maybe it's the toxicity of the dressing room or the fan base. I don't know. But it just seems like it's not a coincidence that this has happened more than once.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, United have that thing of turning really good players into average players. And like, you have to think of it from a human side to understand it. Like, we're mostly here talking about like young players, like our age, like you're cooking it up in Italy, you're living a good life over in Bologna, and then suddenly all the pressure coming to United, all the media. I think he recently broke up with his girlfriend too, which
that fucking sucks, dude. That sucks. I'll be honest, so that sucks.
All this shit happening at the same time, is rough. So I feel bad for him from a human standpoint. But then, like, again, from a human standpoint, the solution would probably be leaving United. So,
yeah. Did I just say? When do I get you were right about Xerxes?
Why did you say what you said about Xerxes?
Because I said that he was, first of all, I said you bought him for too much money for what you were going to get out of him, which, correct. And I also said he isn't a freaking striker. He isn't. He was never a striker. Yes, he plays that position, but he's like the Lacazette, even the Gabriel Jesus. Okay, too many Arsenal comparisons, but he doesn't do the normal striker scores goals things. He does the other things that, sure, definitely are good qualities to have in a player, but he's not number nine. He's more of a 10 or whatever you want to call it. So I saw that coming in. Obviously, he had a crazy season with Bologna. I'm not going to act like I was watching every Bologna game, but from what I saw, the highlights, what I've heard analysts and fans talk about him, I just think the fit was never going to happen, and I think I was right.
Should we repost our Xerxes Yaya Sanogo clip?
Yeah.
Low key, we need some content to fill these days. Like, that might be it.
I dig it.
Okay, I might get on that tonight. But anyways.
I dig it.
But I swear I feel so bad for him from a human point of view. Yeah,
no, for sure. And like, there's a player in there. Like, it's different. Like, I'm gonna be honest, Anthony, I don't know if I see much of a player in there. But Xerxes, I see a player.
And it's harder to feel bad from a human standpoint.
Yeah, but like, just from a footballing standpoint, I actually genuinely see a decent player in Xerxes. I really do. Just not at what he's asked to be doing right now for Manchester United. So
The worst thing about United right now is while all this shit is going down on the field, we're also getting reports that don't expect much from January. You know,
yeah.
FFP, PSR, you know, it's going to be really tough for United to do anything in the window. Oh my God.
I think a lot of clubs are kind of like that too, but yeah, Arsenal has the opposite problem where our manager said don't expect much, but FFP and like there was a report saying like all of that, there's no restrictions for us the way we've spent so far. So
yeah,
hopefully we'll see.
I think the gist of the reports are that we need to sell to buy, which in years past means don't expect anything from United because they couldn't sell a pack of crisps to fucking Eden Hazard in the offseason, you know? That was a good one. That was a Miles kind of joke.
That was good.
I think Casemiro might leave, but again, the wages, we couldn't sell him in the summer. What makes you think we're going to sell him in the winter? Eriksen's probably one to go. Maybe Xerxes now is one to go. Rashford maybe one to go. I have a bold prediction about someone else who may leave soon, but that's something else.
Okay.
But I can't see much happening. We have to do something, you know, because doing nothing is then, you know, putting a sense of like acceptance into fucking being 14th minus 5 goal difference. You know, one of the worst defenses in the league, like a system that doesn't work with these players. But I don't know if I see it or I trust it with Ineos, who has issues that I talked about before. But yeah, man, it's sad.
Sucks to be you. Doesn't suck to be me, I'll tell you that. Right now, it really doesn't.
Arsenal, man. Tell me about Arsenal.
This isn't one of those ones where last season we were just winning. It was like, oh yeah, we won, let's move on. But it was more of that vibe because we need to talk about David Raya.
That mistake.
That was one of the worst performances. First half performances I've ever seen from him. And he wasn't even terrible, but the way he cheated to the opposite side on the goal from Mbeumo. That can't happen.
Loves
like, you cannot.
Goal,
yeah. And it was a cool goal, but you cannot get beat on your post like that. And he cheated so hard. And then 5-10 minutes later, he lets the ball go through his hands and he saves himself from another dive on the line, which he's really good at, by the way. But after that, he locked in. Right after that, we score a goal and then we lock in. We score two more goals before halftime. It's 3-1. Was it before halftime? I think so.
It was...
I should know this.
No, Martinelli scored in the second half, right?
I don't even know. I was watching the game and I can't even tell you.
What a fucking casual. Wow. I know, Martinelli, I think it was 1-1 at halftime. Marino scored from the corner.
It was 1-1 at halftime. Yeah.
And then Martinelli. Right. Yeah.
But I do want to give Brad credit because this is a micro story in the game, but his distribution in the second half was fantastic. And that kind of brought me back into reality. He's been so good and he's allowed to make a mistake here and then. That's why. But on the attacking side, without having one of our best player, Ethan Winery started his first ever Premier League start, that is. And he was great. He was great. He was creative. He was courageous. And what I loved about him is his crosses were meaningful. They weren't just like hidden hopes. They were meaningful. There was precision on them. There was a sense of intimidation when they came in the box, like I talked about with Newcastle. And what happens? Martinelli scores from a cross on his goal, which is a really well-taken goal. And I think that's really good for him because if Arsenal want to continue this run of form without Saka, we need Martinelli to score. Other than that, it was good. It was good. It was like a classic Arsenal kind of dominate the game. And then we're 3-1 up. We don't have to do much because we did our dirty work when we needed to.
Valid. Is the hype real for Gabriel Jesus?
It could be. It really could be. It really could be. I'm not totally convinced, but this player has shown throughout his career that when he scores, he does not lose. It's like 63 games now. So that seems like a simple thing to say. Yeah, score and you're going to win. But with Gabriel Jesus, it's real. If he scores the ball, if he puts it in the net, his team is going to at least not lose. So if he can just find ways and anticipate goals, the goal he scored to equalize against Brentford was fantastic. That was like such a striker's goal. He follows the shot in and gets an easy header. And it's little things like that, that Kai Havertz, while he's a great player, not a natural striker, I don't see that as much from him. There's like when Gabriel Jesus is locked in, there's a hunger and like a sexiness to the way he plays. You know what I mean? So I'm really hoping he can keep this run of form. And I think now the signing in January shouldn't be a striker. I think it needs to be a winger because we're not going to get both, in my opinion. So I think we have to get a wear cover because Sek is gone for a bit and the wingers haven't been doing their job.
Yeah. So. Doesn't even seem like he'll be back from March now. I think it was early March before because he posted that picture of him in surgery. It looked bad.
It's not ideal, but I don't know. Like I said,
the least you could say is that the other guys are stepping up in his absence. And I know it's only been a couple of games. Odegaard played, right? How was he?
No, I thought he was better. I didn't like it totally. I didn't love his performance the game before. He wasn't as crucial to the game today, but I just thought overall it was just a solid game for him.
That's fair. So if you have him stepping up even more than he is now, if you have Gabriel Jesus still on form, if you have Martinelli still on form, because he's been looking better these past couple of games, you pair that with Winery coming into the team and looking better. Rice is obviously good. You have the best defense in the league, let's not forget. Miles Lewis-Skelly doesn't look bad either. So, it's not an impossibility that you stayed this far behind Liverpool, who could drop off a little bit. Maybe. That's a big maybe. Because they're showing no signs of slowing down. There is a world maybe where Trent leaves in Jan. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just playing his last few games at Liverpool right now. Because I think a report came out that they just rejected a bid from Real Madrid. If he doesn't go now, he'll probably go in the summer. That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
Which I got my issues about. But.
Yeah, we did that last pod. He had a little crash out.
Clip farming at all.
We can go Liverpool. I mean, this is kind of, it was like one of the earlier games in the the block of Christmas.
Casual 5-0 win at West Ham, like, which is usually a tough place to go, but not for them.
This is one of those ones where I'm like, what do we even say besides they're fantastic? Like, and Salah is, might be the second best Premier League player ever.
Behind who?
Come on, bud.
Titi?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyways. Salah has 30 goals and assists after 18 games. That is quite literally Messi and Ronaldo numbers. I think there's like a graphic of him like Messi's goals and assists after 18 games, and like it was half and half on over under 30. So this is like,
it's ridiculous.
He's literally on par for the best Premier League season of all time. Like, probably the best one since like his first year at Liverpool,
like
where he broke the scoring record. Maybe his Hazard season after that, or Holland the year before last. Yeah.
It's like, it's crazy. Like, it's, I don't even know what to say. Like, just to, I'm just trying to give you some examples. Like, some of the best ones that we've seen are obviously Holland's 36 goals. I don't think Salah's going to touch that. But 36 goals and 8 assists in 35 games is ridiculous. Henry in 2002-03 had 24 goals and 20 assists in 37 games. But Arsenal finished second. So that matters. I feel like that
was
matters.
Was that 2006?
No. 2002-03.
Oh, okay.
And then Suarez in 2013-14, 31 goals and 12 assists. Yeah, so that one was, I think those are right. Don't fact check me, but I think those are right.
Fair.
So those are some valuations. He's already at 30 before Jan. So at that point, before Jan. So
I know.
It's ridiculous.
Like, I think this is a bit of a weird stat, but in terms of FPL points, I think he's like by far the fastest player ever to reach 200 FPL points. And Blake only brought him in last week. Just a reminder.
Guys, I'm going to have to wear some. We'll save it, I guess. But I'm going to wear some. It's not good. It's not looking good.
Oh my God, I cannot wait. All right, moving on. Unless there's something else to say about, I mean, like, Liverpool is now in that stage of, oh, they won, cool, move on.
I know. It's, yeah.
And there's nothing really to say besides West Ham. I think Kudus had some good moments in that game, but nothing much else to say.
I saw someone say that. Who was it? I forget. He's like he's a Palace fan, but he always talks about Arsenal. He's on TikTok.
I don't know who you're talking about. I
forget his name. He's kind of funny, but maybe it's Ollie something.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yes. But no, he's not. He definitely is a Palace fan.
I know.
But he goes to games.
He likes Arsenal. He likes Arsenal. I'm not going to lie. He talks about them a lot.
He talks about United too.
Fair enough.
I think he's just not biased in any way. Okay. So he's just straight up.
Wish I could say this. No, I'm kidding. But he says something that, like, this is just another cycle in the West Ham lifestyle of football, where they just go up and down. They realize they just have to play David Moyes ball, and if they want to, you know, they want to, like, actually succeed. So
no, literally, it's like a trap always.
Yeah, literally,
they can't. Literally. They will never break through. The day I start seeing West Ham play gangan pressing tiki taka football, I'm leaving the sport. I'm done.
Game's gone.
The game is well and truly gone.
Yeah.
In that moment. Okay. Let's go to something else you can guarantee in football, which is Tottenham being Tottenham. And Tottenham choking Leeds. And them putting up subpar performances against the worst teams in the league. And I can't talk too much shit because we just lost to Wolves. But Tottenham were, I think they were 1-0 down against Wolves. They came back 2-1. They were holding it till the 87th minute until Strand Larsen tied it up. And, oh my goodness.
I don't know what to say. Like, it's just hilarious.
Let me tell you, Blake. Like, I was going to put this in our bold predictions, but I kind of realized when I was writing it that this is not bold at all.
Yeah.
And just getting sacked. Like, there's no way around it. I could almost put my house on it. Ange will not see the end of this season.
Yeah.
I think
it's kind of his fault. And I do want to say this as well. If Amorim doesn't get results quickly, or doesn't get the players he needs quickly, he's going to follow the exact same road, because Ange is playing a system and he wants to play a system, and that's all he wants to do. And that's a different story with Amorim because he's still very, very young in this United team. But they're
if you put that in your bold predictions, I would not call you crazy. I would not call you crazy.
Yeah.
But the thing with Ange is like, obviously the people above him are like kind of borderline competent. I think we all know that they've hired and fired how many managers in how many years. So like, I think he's just like, this is the product of a pretty bad system above Ange. But the system that he plays and the goals that they've let through because of it are appalling. I know they have some injuries out. Like, they have a lot of defenders out right now. Their center back partnership of like Dragozin and Archie Gray is diabolical.
Pretty bad.
I just think in that moment that they'd adjust the system and sit back a little more, but they just don't do that. And it's so frustrating to see it, even from a neutral perspective. I couldn't imagine if I was a Tottenham fan. And I think Ange is a really good manager. I think he's got the goal to be Premier League level, but you have to have even a little bit of flexibility. And when you don't have that, you're going to get punished. And this is one of those moments.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And eventually he's going to become the scapegoat again. And Tottenham are going to go through the cycle again.
Yeah.
Anyways. A lukewarm take from Mr. Bancourt over here.
No, I respect it. I respect it. I do.
The last team that we have to talk about is City, who beat Leicester. I know.
Wow.
I know.
Good for you.
Who the fuck cares? Who the fuck cares? But it is their first win in a while. We should talk about it. Haaland back on the score sheet. Savinho with his first goal for City. And now I think their second win in 15, I think.
It's crazy. You know what else is crazy, though? Is like, yeah, they're sixth, but you would think if you didn't win for that many games and you're only sixth, wow, that's crazy. Wow. Mm. No, never mind. They fell a lot. they're 14 points back from Liverpool.
I know, dude. I know.
Bro, why couldn't Arsenal just run away with it?
This is what I was saying, bro. This is what I was fucking saying. God. I know I was annoying for that take 2 weeks ago, but it's fucking true. It's so embarrassing you guys aren't winning this league.
Yeah, it's so embarrassing you're 14th. I suck my dick.
I know. Like, sorry. a point that I wanted to make real quick is like, I think we've been forgetting how good Haaland is this year because it seems like a fucking lifetime ago. I think in the first like three games of the season, he had like six or seven goals. Like he was running away with the golden boot even when Salah started the year on fire. So even now, after this crazy dry spell, he's only three goals back on Salah and he's on goal. Like he's on track for like 30 goals this season in the Prem alone. That tells you how crazy good Haaland is and how like we've kind of like gone numb to like how prolific this guy could be. It goes back to your point about Isak that like, do we disrespect Haaland a little bit too much?
Probably. Definitely. Probably.
League One player sticks out to me. Like
also just who he plays for. And I was thinking about this too. I think this City thing is really like a lack of pressure on them. Because you know the whole saying, pressure makes diamonds? Okay, Haaland came in and they won the treble. Okay, then the next season, they won the Premier League. Like, these players, I don't care. I do not care. These players don't want it as bad as Arsenal does or Liverpool or Chelsea. It's human nature. Like, I'm telling you, they don't. And you can disagree with me, but I genuinely think that's why we're seeing such a drop-off here. Like, there has to be a reason why now it's not working. And the system didn't change. The system didn't change, but the players sure did. But at the same time, you look at the squad on paper, you wouldn't think they would lose two out of the, or they would only win, you wouldn't think that they would only win two out of their last 15. And I genuinely think that's because there wasn't any pressure on them going into the season. If they didn't win this year, it's like, oh, wow, whatever. There's pressure on them, but they themselves probably didn't feel any pressure. They know that they've had this league in their back pockets for the last half decade, even more than that. So when there's not a lot of pressure to win or there's not a lot of like outside I don't know. It just seems like there's just a lack of intensity in the way that they were going about their business. And now I'm sure it'll ramp up. But at the same time, I think that has to be a point that is made about the City team.
You could definitely argue that complacency has kind of played the squad a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All they fucking known is winning.
Yeah.
Four Premier Leagues in a row was never, ever done before. Adding a treble in the middle of that. And like, yeah, I don't blame them for having a year off. And hey, that was one of my predictions at the start of the season, that Man City would drop off, just because fucking the human body is undefeated. Fatigue plagues everybody at one point or another. And thank you. And I thought it would be due to Arsenal being really good this season, but I just got the top just kind of mixed up there. But, you know, fine. Yeah. Are we going to see Man City in their Europa League? Is that gonna happen?
That'd be really funny.
Oof. Ugh, yeah, I don't like
Can't
that.
Can't you like reject the invitation though? I'm pretty sure you can. Would they do that?
No, they wouldn't do that.
You can do that though, right? I think you can.
I think you can. People were saying that Chelsea was going to reject the Conference League invite.
And I mean, they kind of did. Like, I know they can still register their players after, but I mean,
they just play the kids and like probably what Man City would do. It'd be like fucking. Yeah.
Who cares?
Oscar Bob, McAtee out there, Lewis would cook in the Europa, and they'd still fucking win every game against Sturm Graz or whoever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, for sure.
Some random football stories that I was looking up while Blake was running late. And then we'll get into our big bowl predictions. Sorry, I kind of just exposed you there, but it's okay. It's okay. I feel like, I'm sorry to anybody listening. Like, did I wake up on the wrong side of the bed today? I don't know what's gotten into me.
Nah, it's okay. I wasn't.
I'm just making a few digs. That's the
second time in a row. I get it. I've been a little tardy. It's my fault.
No, hey, but brother, you're here. That's all that matters.
We here.
In fact, a big story this week in football has been Dani Olmo. Barcelona couldn't register him again, and
that's a good ball.
We say that he's like kind of like a free agent, technically, because hey, we are in January, we are in the transfer window. Just because shit ain't happening doesn't mean that it's not open. Dani Olmo could technically leave Barcelona this month. I'm reading that the people at the top of Barca are optimistic about keeping Dani Olmo. They list it as an almost certainty that he will stay at Barcelona, but basically he didn't officially get registered in the squad when he signed for them in the summer for £50 million, by the way. So this would be crazy if he leaves on a free.
Yeah.
But they got like an exemption for 6 months or something like that. Now those 6 months have come, they've tried to like, you know, prolong the exception, but La Liga rejected it. La Liga, by the way, just want to fucking get rid of every good player in this league, apparently. This is what they did with Messi. Yeah. And now Dani Olmo is a free agent. Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, and Man United apparently renewed interest in Dani Olmo. I don't think he's going to leave.
I don't think he would either. I mean, I don't really know how this whole thing works for him to get playing.
It's
again,
all like legal contract stuff that I don't really understand.
I'm sure they'll find a way. They usually do. So, yeah.
In other news, you know Sergio Conceição? You've heard of him? Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, he's going to be playing a game against his dad.
Okay. Are you going to explain to me?
So, did I say Sergio Conceição? Sergio Conceição is the new AC Milan manager after Paulo Fonseca was just sacked. Mm-hmm. And they're playing Juventus tomorrow, where his son, Francisco Conceição, has been fucking tearing it up for the past like little bit. They play in the Supercoppa Italiana final tomorrow. Guess where?
San Siro? I don't know.
Qatar.
So not Italy. Cool. That makes sense.
That's just a little funny thing.
Yeah, it's like. Cool. Cool.
Would that get in your head playing against your dad or managing against your son?
I think the managing, yeah, but the playing, no, you just go out there and have a blast.
Last season they were on Porto together. So they were
Oh right, okay.
I mean, so he was managing his son. We had like we had an Austin Rivers situation.
Didn't even know he played for Juventus, not gonna lie. So
yeah. Okay.
Ooh. I did know about the Milan thing. I did see that. So there you go.
Okay. And last but not least, Gareth Southgate was just awarded a knighthood. I think this is so utter woke nonsense. I'm this hurts my head.
I believe you just disrespected him. You called him the wrong. Please renew and do it the way you should.
See, if I was from England, I think I'd have to respect it. Yeah. But since I'm not there,
yeah.
I'm not giving him like the same title as Sir Alex Ferguson. Right? I'm not. This is Gareth freaking Southgate we're talking about. He's the fourth person to be knighted having managed the national team. I'm sorry. Are we just accepting mediocrity over in England now? Because all this guy is known as is losing and wasting like the second golden generation of England. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this?
I just think it's hilarious. Like I don't have words to describe. I just think it's utterly hilarious. So I won't have an explanation for you, but I think it's fun.
Lost a World Cup semifinal to Croatia, somehow seen as a success. Lost the final of the Euros at home to Italy after choking a lead. losing in the quarterfinals to France at the World Cup, and then losing another Euros final, this time to a much weaker on paper Spain team after tying it up with 15 minutes to go. And they're knighting him? They're knighting him? What do I have to do? Oh my God.
Clearly not win a World Cup or any trophy since however long. That's what gets him a knight. Knighthood.
They'll be bringing you over there next thing we know, Blake.
You know,
the next step is big in England, right? It's big over there. What? The next step is big in England.
Oh, yeah, it is. No, yeah, it's like it's probably bigger than in Canada.
See?
Anyway. Well, our shout out to CBC, our production company. Well, anyway, yeah.
Let's move on to our bowl predictions, okay?
Okay, let's do it.
Let's get into it. So me and Blake have two/three bold predictions for the year of 2025. We also asked Antoine to send him his in as well. But Miles is a little bit occupied at the moment, but I'm sure he would come up with some disastrous things as well. So you didn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Shall we go one by one?
Yeah.
And then we'll see.
Like we're going all three right now, or just we're saying one.
Give me yours first, and then we'll go mine, then we'll go Antoine's.
Okay, so mine... See, I kind of already said this at the start of the season, but I'm going to start with this one, and it kind of goes twofold. But my first bold prediction for 2025 is that Arsenal win a major.
Win a major is crazy.
What do you mean win a major?
Is this golf? Like, a major title.
Win a major title. Like, can you stop being on my ass for 1 second? Jesus. My prediction is that Arsenal win a major title. And while I'm not sure if that'll be the Premier League, I think this is Arsenal's year to win the Champions League. I predict them to win the Champions League at the start. They had a little bit of a slip up against Inter. But other than that, they've been really, really solid in the group stages. And the way they play is like kind of perfect for Champions League football. Their defense is fantastic.
Mm.
They aren't going to rest players midweek against, you know, players. They aren't going to rest anyone midweek in the Champions League. Sure. So if they sign someone, a winger, a striker in January to help boost their fortify their attack for the league, then the Champions League players will be more fresh. And I think this is the year that after the terrible non-call against Saka, against Bayern, last season, after that whole debacle, which should have put Arsenal through,
brother.
I think this is a season that Arsenal proves that they are a mainstay, not just in Champions League football, but at the top of European football. I think it's the year that they win Champions League.
If you guys could have the same problem as last year, where you're really close in the league and you're really close in the Champions League, so you go hard for both, but you kind of can't go hard for both, and they end up falling apart simultaneously.
Yeah.
Who knows?
The thing is, my gut is telling me we'll be out of a race a little sooner than we were never out of a race last season. I think you might be a little farther out. And like I said, we get a winger in January, some depth gets fortified. And then mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I trust this team against any other team in the world to go up there and perform and keep a clean sheet, especially at home, maybe not away, but you limit it to one or two away. You hope you can score as well. And then if your player's on form, if Saka's back, if Odegaard is at his top level of his game, we can beat any team in the world.
That's fair. And I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. It's not a crazy prediction at all. I think at the beginning of the season, I said Barcelona would win the Champions League. And I'm not moving off that prediction still. But but yeah, no, like I can't hate on you saying Arsenal. Not at all.
Okay.
My first bold prediction, and this is like coming up soon, I think, mm-hmm. Is that Cristiano Ronaldo changes teams in Saudi Arabia. Hear me out.
Only you would even give a shit about that. You're such a Ronaldo fanboy.
So
please go ahead.
There are two things happening at the same time, right? I don't think Ronaldo's leaving Saudi Arabia, like almost for the rest of his career. I think he loves it there. He can get his 1,000 goals. Obviously, he's treated like a fucking king over in Riyadh. Like, I don't think he's leaving. But Al Nassr kind of suck. And Sekou Fofana just left. I think he went back to Nantes or something, or Rennes or something. Mm-hmm. But that's like one of their key players who is also at a decent age. I know they still have like Savio there and stuff. But like, if that continues to happen, then Ronaldo's not going to want to be there anymore. At the same time, Al Hilal, another team in Riyadh, are doing very well. And tell me they wouldn't be really freaking happy to sign Cristiano Ronaldo, who, by the way, is a free agent right now. Ronaldo could leave Al Nassr tomorrow. If he wanted to come back to Europe right now, he could. The expectation is, like, we're just not hearing anything about it. Like, he had a clause in his contract not a clause in his contract. I think he just signed a 2-year contract. And in Saudi Arabia, this is their off season. So, like, that contract is, like, out.
Oh, now. Okay.
Like, it's not a pre-contract thing. Like, he could change club right now.
I understand. Okay.
The expectation is that he stays in Saudi Arabia, probably for Al Nassr. But, bro, it's reasonable. He wants to win. It's Cristiano Ronaldo, and he wants to stay in Saudi Arabia. And I don't care who's at Al Hilal. I think he could go there and tear it up on the best team in the league. They're not being loyal to Mitrovic if Ronaldo comes knocking, is what I'm saying, bro. Like,
yeah, no, okay.
And imagine, and then he could be on the same team in one day, fingers crossed, if Neymar comes back too.
Mm-hmm.
Possible.
I see it. I see it.
He could even go to like Benzema's team or whatever.
Yeah, no, I see it. It's a possibility. I like it.
See? I'm thinking outside the box here.
Are we going to Antoine's or are we going
Let's go Antoine's. Let's go Antoine's.
Okay.
Antoine's is definitely Prem-centric again. His is that Liverpool win the treble and Salah wins the Ballon d'Or.
I feel like this, the treble's very hot.
The treble's hot. Salah, Ballon d'Or... Who else right now?
Yeah, it's kind of obvious. Yeah.
It
makes sense. This isn't one of my takes, but I'm going to shout out my boy Jack, who I was talking to just today. But he said one of his takes was that Liverpool wouldn't win the Premier League. And that is pretty hot right now. I kind of maybe agree with it, but I still think they might run away with it. But I don't know. I think them winning the treble is crazy because they have to... Do we count Carabao Cup as a treble? They're out though, right?
They're still in Carabao Cup and they're still in FA Cup. They're still in everything. They could win the quadruple.
Yeah. Well, no one's played in the FA Cup yet. Like, we have the Premier teams have it.
Oh yeah.
But
we're playing each other in a few days, right?
Yeah.
Yay.
I hope Neto plays. He hasn't played yet.
Oh my god, I forgot you signed Neto. Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. He hasn't played
yet. I hope so too, man. I hope so too.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay. Do you want my number two?
Go ahead.
My number two is that Heung-min Son leaves Tottenham.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
So
okay.
His contract's up. This is a contract year for him. His contract's up. And he has been playing well. He really hasn't. And ever since
ever since he missed that chance against City to put Arsenal as Premier League champions. I don't know. It has felt the same. And he's still a really good player. But this season alone should tell you that, I don't know, maybe he's just not in it as much as he used to be, or age is finally getting to him. But he looks at Harry Kane going to Bayern, and sure, they didn't win last season, but they're going to win this season. And he's seen other players leave Tottenham and have success. He's been there for a long time, and this Ange system is not working out perfectly right now. What stops him from, at the end of this season, just going, I'm done. I don't want to sign a contract, because they need to either get it done soon or he's gone. So I think he leaves Tottenham.
Wow, that's fair. And where do you think he would go?
Honestly, I don't outrule a move back to Germany, like, but at the same time, I have no idea. Like, he's still a high quality name that a team like, I don't know, like a Bayern or like a Milan, or they don't really sign players like that. But you know what I mean? Like, a high quality team would still get him. I don't know where, but I think he definitely leaves the Prem. Like, I think he has enough respect for Tottenham, like Harry Kane did. He wouldn't go to another Prem team. You know what I mean?
Fair. If Wirtz leaves Leverkusen, then signing Son back up would be a decent, like, little replacement there.
I don't see him anywhere but Germany or the Prem, I guess. Like,
I don't see him anywhere but Tottenham, bro. Like, that's all I know Son as.
I know, yeah. but I said it, and I said it, and even you, did you not kind of see a click in your mind?
I do see a vision of, like, Tottenham falling down, but
yeah.
Yeah, that's
See,
actually a
I
good one.
I have some hot takes. I have some hot
That's
takes.
A good one. No, that's a good one. That's a that makes me think. That makes me go, oh, Blake. Good little.
I call it, bro. One.
Good, good. My second bold prediction is that I don't know if this is a hot or a cold take, because I feel like there are people on either sides of this.
Okay.
But this is my stance on
unbiased judge this. Right here.
Okay, so say hot or cold right away. No thinking.
Okay.
The Club World Cup will be a success.
That's a hot take, because everyone hates it.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying. But I think there are also people that could see it being a success. So,
okay, explain that to me, because I'm on the side of it's terrible and I don't know why it's a thing. So please help me learn.
I'm kind of on the side of that too. I don't think I'll love it, but we're not really talking about how we're going to feel. We're talking about how the general populace are going to feel. It's free on DAZN, right?
Okay.
It's free to stream on DAZN, and it's based in the US with Messi going up against the big teams. I think your, like, traditional American media is going to be all over this. There will be hate from like the UK side. I could definitely see that, and I think there'll be a lot of controversy around, like, the big teams playing their best players. But I think them going up against each other, and especially, like, against, like the Messis of the world, I think those games will be not big in, like, a football consequence kind of way, but big as in, like, a coverage kind of way.
Right.
Like, okay. I think DAZN signed this big deal to cover the Club World Cup. Like, I think it'll be a net positive for them, if that makes sense. Yeah. I don't think I'll like it. Unless we get that streaming deal, and unless we get that sponsorship deal, you know, we're always open. But I could see, like, a lot of, like, the casual audience, especially in North America, being fans. Like, imagine the City and the Chelsea and the Juve. Who else is in it? hold on, I got it. The Real Madrid fans, the Bayern fans, the PSG fans, Milan, Porto, Benfica, Atleti. Like, those fans, those are, like, global institutions that have a lot of fans in North America. And I think for them especially, this is going to be superb. Right. Depends if the best players play. Because if they don't, then it's a glorified postseason tournament, I guess.
For sure.
No.
Fair.
So that's hot, you say?
I think it's hot. I do.
That's fair. Antoine's second bold prediction has me. This shouldn't be hot, but it's hot.
Okay.
Man City still finished second, only a couple of points behind Liverpool.
That's hot. That's like, that's really hot now.
Scorching, eh?
You need,
if for them to catch Liverpool, just even a couple points, we'll say 6 points. They're going to catch them in within 6 points. Let's say Liverpool wins their game in hand. They would be 17 points clear. That means Liverpool needs to lose, just off layman's terms, needs to lose like four games on the trot while City makes up those four games also. Just to get within six. That's not going to happen. Like, it could, but for Liverpool to get to go on a run that terrible and to expect City to capitalize on that as well from what they've shown, I don't think that's going to happen. And that's not also to say, that's not how these things work. Forest, Arsenal, Chelsea, Newcastle, they're all going to keep playing and keep picking up points while Liverpool drops them or does whatever. So I don't know about that one.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, I could see City going on a really good run and getting up to second or third. Mm-hmm. But I can't see Liverpool dropping off that hard either. You know, I can't even see Arsenal dropping off that hard either. So that's like, you're kind of making two predictions there. And I don't think those two will happen at the same time. Mm-hmm. But anyways, his third one is the funniest. We'll get to that. But give me your third first, Blake.
Mine's another homer one, but not in the homer way you expect. But I don't know the final part of it, but I know this part. With Alphonso Davies just recently getting engaged, this second half of the season is going to show everyone why he's the best left back in the best left back in the world again. Now, okay, no, listen. So,
God, bro.
When Bayern won the Champions League, he was pretty much, no doubt in anyone's mind, the best left back in the world. And ever since then, Bayern has won their leads, but there hasn't been a lot of European success. I think Bayern go on a bit of a run here. Maybe they're not going to, I don't think they're going to win it, obviously, but I could see them making a final, making a semifinals, and Alphonso Davies scoring a really important goal. And obviously, it's a contract year for him. I don't know if he's going to go to United or Real Madrid or wherever, but he's probably going to move away from Bayern. But I do see him in this second half of the season just absolutely going ham and showing everyone why he is one of the best players in the world at his position. And I think that's not a lot. That's not a crazy take, but it might be. I don't know.
I remember when he broke up with Jordan Huitema, everybody was saying the exact same things. Oh my God, he's going into monk mode, dude. Like, he's going to go fucking crazy this season. Yeah. He's going to go insane. You're dropping preseason videos of him all fucking oiled up and jacked, and like, we all thought like crazy times were coming for Alphonso Davies. Like, he's had his moments. Like, remember that screamer he scored against Real Madrid last season? Like, he's had moments, dude, where like we are reminded of that. But I just don't think he's very happy at Bayern. I think he's definitely leaving, but will that make him play better or will that make him play worse? I don't know.
So you think it's hot then? You think it's a hot take?
I think it's hot. Hot. Because you're basically saying, oh, he's going to remind us why he's going to become the best player in the world at his position because he got engaged, dude.
Well, that's kind of a funny part of it. But at the same time, it's a contract year. And these players in contracts year are known to play well. Like Van Dijk and Trent and Salah, contract year. Right? And they're playing insane. Fair. That happens in so many sports around the world. The contract year curse, I guess I call it, where you either, they play great and it's great for you, but you either have to pay them a lot more than you were going to. This kind of happens more in American sports because of cap things, but you pay them more than you thought you were going to, or they go somewhere else because of how well they play. And I think Alphonso Davies is going to light a fire under him. He's in a good situation now. He's engaged. And also, he needs to realize if he wants to get a big move somewhere else, he needs to play at the best of his ability.
Facts. No. I agree with that completely.
See, not super prem centric. I like that one.
And see, you did come up with a third in the middle of
recording. I did.
I knew you would, and I did too. Okay, I did too.
So I like this a lot, by the way.
See? My third bold prediction, and if you have any more, like, feel free to like come up with it just on the spot. My third bold prediction is that Rashford and Garnacho leaves United.
What?
I think Rashford leaves quite amicably. Maybe not in Jan, but in the summer. I don't know where he goes, but whatever. But I think Garnacho in particular has a really, really public falling out with the United hierarchy, and he goes. I think the seeds have been planted. I don't like I've said this before, I don't like the posse that's like kind of around him. I think he may have one or two like pretty bad influences. I think like the seeds have been set with like, I think he's like, there are some rumbling beefs there of like him getting pissed off at the fans. Like there was that one United fan who pointed his phone in Garnacho's face and went like, "Yo, Garnacho, you just need to get better. You're passing and you're shooting and you're dribbling and your movement and your..."
Yeah.
There was that moment before Europa League game, and it was a big deal whenever it was.
Yeah.
But he got like, I think he then scored in the next game and like he refused to celebrate.
Yeah.
And Bruno said something about it. But I think that plus not really fitting into Amorim's system, plus Amorim like being a little bit of a disciplinarian, plus United not just needing like a scapegoat or a sacrificial lamb, but maybe trying to make an example out of somebody. I think Garnacho is that, which would suck because I do like him, man. I do like him. And even you like him.
He's a good player.
Even last season, you're telling me like, good little player.
Yeah, that would suck. It's like, that would be like an Emile Smith Rowe kind of depart for you guys, right? Like a player you really love and who you saw so much in, but it just didn't work for whatever reason.
Yep.
So that would suck. That would suck. The Rashford one isn't hot, but combined with Garnacho, absolutely.
Yeah. Is anyone else that would leave United? Like that could be hot. Amorim getting sacked could be one. This time in a year, if this continues, if he doesn't get backed in the summer, then he could be, you know.
Well, then you guys are like actually just a mid-table club because then you guys are actually fucked.
Yeah, that solidifies it, absolutely.
Yeah. One of my takes before we get to Antoine's, it was different. It's not about United, but it was that Forest actually make top four.
Okay. Okay.
Which, like, obviously they're in the spot right now, but, like, can they do this for the 19 games? Like, the betting odds probably say no, but I feel like there's a chance, man. Mm-hmm. There really is a chance. They've been picking up points. Chris Wood's on this crazy run. Like, I don't know. Like, it's not unfathomable.
Sure.
Milenkovic.
I mean, he plays for...
Yeah, man, Milenkovic is going to carry them. Yeah. I was expecting like five other names after that, but
he's a good player. He's a good player. I don't know. Okay, well, never mind.
It's Milenkovic, it's Gibbs White, it's Alanga, it's Chris Wood, it's Hudson Doi.
Because, like, he's the rock at the back. You know, I thought you were going to back me up with that. You didn't say anything.
I thought you were going to say something.
I
was just allowing the play. That was so funny. Anyway, and Milenkovic is gonna score 25 and just carry.
Okay, he might stop 25. I don't know. Shit.
Anyway, speaking of niche players, Antoine's last take.
Oh my god.
George's Mikitadze to have a breakout year.
We're not doing this. Like, it's just fresh buys, bro. Like, it's so annoying, bro.
I thought 2024 was his breakout year.
Yeah, I thought the
like, I thought the Euros was a breakout
the
year.
Euros was a breakout.
I thought this season was his breakout year. Oh, he did get a move. He was at Metz. Where is he? He went to a bigger French club.
Yeah,
Like Lille or something. I should know this.
Yeah, no, he's at Lyon now.
Right, he's at Lyon now. Who are? I mean, they got their own issues, but
yeah. But like, that's just he's such a homer, dude. He honestly might be the bigger homer than all of us. I'm not gonna lie.
No, because the thing is, like, if he was a homer from England, then he wouldn't stand out because he'd just be like all of us. Yeah. But I think he applies more homerism that he's from a niche country, like, well, not niche, but niche to us. No.
That's fair. That's fair. That's super fair.
Oh my God. Did you know he wears number 69? Of course he does.
Of course he does.
Yes, he does.
He has 4 goals in 15 games. Cool, man. I think he's going to always be one of those players that rips it up for Georgia and then comes back to be okay elsewhere.
Yeah. Like Arnautovic, like those European Arnautovic's and your, you know, your random Shaqiri's. Guys would do that.
Yeah. We're saying this, and now Mikitadze will turn to the best player in the world.
Probably.
And then United will sign him.
And then United will sign him, and he'll turn into a bum. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, let's do a quick FPL roundup, Blake, and then we will wrap up this inaugural episode. Inaugural? That means first, right? It's first episode of 2025. Solid? Okay. Good plan? Okay.
I was about to say, I actually, this might... even though it's remote, it's probably one of my favorite pods I've ever done. It's been a lot of fun, this one. I really like this.
It has.
But you're ruining it right now. I'm not going to lie. You're really ruining it.
Well, it's not my fault. You just can't put a good points total together, Blake, all right? Just this is the game you want to play. This is what we're doing, okay? FPL this week. Listen, bro, it's been a great week for some, a terrible week for others in the 6YB year 2 league. Blake is now 149 points back on Miles. As the great Ole Gunnar Solskjaer once said, Blake, mountains are there to be climbed, but you got to get fucking climbing.
Yeah, I do. I really do. I really do.
Let's go last to first, because on a positive side for you, Mr. Talibus, you only finished 2 points behind Antoine this week. So, round of applause. Nice. Round of applause. Let's check out the team here. A total of 61 points, which Blake said was average, but actually a little bit below. You had Verbruggen in net, benching Flecken. Okay. You had Leif Davis. Another start, another clean sheet. Like, fair play for that one. Robertson, another clean sheet, but didn't really put up the same points as Trent. Salah, you did really well, but you didn't captain him. Palmer blanked, unfortunately, though had his chances. And Rodgers, 11-pointer. João Pedro, 9-pointer. Cunha off at halftime. You didn't have Isak. That's unfortunate. But, like, if you had, like, a better... It was literally on the captain choice. You would have had another 14 points. You would have been way better off. And Cunha coming off at halftime is unlucky for you. So you were really close to a really good week, Blake.
Thanks. The bad Chile manager just is... He doesn't do press conferences anymore. So,
oh.
Yeah, I couldn't get any information from
this is what you're doing now. Okay. Okay, yeah. Cool. So that's a no comment kind of action. Okay. Well, only 2 points higher than Chiabati Achille was Mr. Makawonyi and Cheese, who also finished under average and who will be even sadder about his week. He also captained Cole Palmer, which you just cannot do anymore because this is FPL in 2024. It's Salah every week, baby. All right.
25.
Salah.
25.
Huh? Oh, 20, you said 2024. Of course. But we're talking about games from 24, are we not?
All right. All right.
So... Okay. Trent, 15-pointer. That's the Trent that we know and love. He had Dean Henderson in net. Robinson for 4 points. You had him on your bench, Blake. Besides that,
Saliba, my whole backline had 4 points or more. So I just missed on one.
There you go. Cunha off at halftime is rough again. I also had Greaves on my bench for 6 points. I don't think I'm ever going to play him, but that's good to see. Amad blanked. I think that's a bad pick now, having Amad, because I think he's moving more to like a wingback position. And then Isak is a good pickup. João Pedro is a good pickup. Like, this is an all right team that, again, just got the captain wrong. Yeah, that's 14 more points that he missed out on. But... no more Mr. Rice Kai. He got it right. Salah for 32 is absolutely beautiful. He also had Gabriel Jesus, which last week, Blake, we were making fun of. We were making fun of Gabriel Jesus' pickup. We said this is the most red herring kind of pick in the world. Like, but he's did well. 12 points. We'll have to see if his form continues. Also, Rodgers did well. Dan Byrne, clean sheet. Jesus freaking Christ. And that's about it. having Gabriel Jesus was crazy good for Miles. And then we move on to number one this week, which is Roll the Deitch, myself, who finished a big, who gained a big 25 points on Antoine this week, ladies and gentlemen. He had Lewis 6 points, Alexander Arnold 15 points, Enzo 1 point, Salah 32, Palmer 2, Rogers 11, Isak 7, João Pedro 9, Nicholas Jackson 1.
Greaves, man, you drag these fucking FPL things. Like, no one cares. The game's dumb anyway. Like,
you don't care, mate. You don't care. You don't care.
Does it? No one cares,
now. This is big. This is big. This is big in the 6YB league, because after this week, Roll of the Deitch is just 9 points. Is that not 9 points back on the number one spot? And he is coming for it. All right. He is doubling down on the FPL Raptor and the FPL Harry videos. And he will catch Macaroni and Cheese. He swears. Or else he's retiring.
That's great, lad. I'm so happy for you.
Okay. Thanks, mate. I really, really appreciate the support here.
I don't know what you want from me. Like, I really don't. Like, I'm sorry. I just don't know.
We could help you out, Blake. We could help you out.
No, I got it. If I do come back, it'll be the craziest comeback in history. So there you go.
Mountains are there to be climbed, dude. There you go.
There to be climbed. Okay.
Like, I'm not losing faith on you. You just gotta make up 10 points a week.
Yeah, it's doable. It's doable.
It's doable. It's tough, 10. But it's doable. Here. With that being said, Blake, this is gonna bring an end to episode 76 of the 6 Yard Box podcast. Maybe our last remotes of the break.
I reckon.
You think? You think we could get the studio for the 10th?
I hope so.
I'm down for it. Like, if you're down for it, you just gotta put the booking in, and then we can hopefully get it if the time's right.
I think we could.
Okay. All right. Maybe. You gotta let me know before Sunday when I pay the subscription again.
Anyway. I will.
Everybody listening, thank you again for a brilliant week of the 6 Yard Box podcast. We hope you had a wonderful New Year's and a wonderful Christmas now that the holidays are over and we're back to regularly programmed life. A big year ahead for the pod, we hope, and a big year for all you guys listening, we hope as well. With that being said, Blake, send us away. And everybody, thank you for listening.
We out.
See everybody.